This is just a little bit of a view into conversations that IT folks have after hours. You're going to be the fly on the wall as we sit down and talk through the things that we talk through.
I'm John Flory. I'm the CISO of Harbor Networks, 30-year vet in the technology / security field. I never thought I'd be saying that, but it's been a lot of change. It's been great.
I'm Philip Rogers. I'm the CIO from Protocol Networks. I've got a career in IT operations that started out through AOL, through telco companies in the 2000s. And before Protocol Networks, I was the head of service protection for the Americas for the Royal Bank of Scotland. I'm excited to have some conversations and see where they go.
Hi, my name is Kristen Koenig. I'm a consultant with Harbor Networks. I've worked on the consulting side of the IT industry for the last 10 years, and I will be moderating the podcast series between Phil and John. All right. Good afternoon. Our first question for John and Philip. How has COVID impacted your clients? What types of strategic conversations have you been having with them, and how have they changed as a result?
Go ahead, Philip. Start us off.
I will say we're having a lot more conversations than we had before, and we're having a lot more openness towards strategic conversations than we've ever had before, which is a good thing. We, you know, as consultants, you always push to have those deep thoughts about what's going on in the future, and you tend to get a little bit of a pushback where they say, "Yeah, but I'm concerned about my problem today." Well, COVID kind of brought reality into their world, and now they're perfectly willing to talk about big picture things that may or may not happen, because one thing that may or may not happened and totally changed their lives.
Yeah, from where I sit, you know, on the security side, everything has gotten turned upside down. Policy has been thrown out the window. Really, mindset of organizations has been changed. Staff and leaders, people that before did not think working from home could be productive, now have different thoughts. But my thoughts immediately go that, yeah, you're productive, but it also makes it more dangerous. So we have to make sure that we're working hand in hand as part of the series that Philip and I are working on. Mm-hmm. How do we work hand in hand to have a holistic solution when chaos breaks loose? And in technology, you know, it's part of our everyday life. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think people's mindset is expect anything. Yeah. So we have to be prepared. Right, Philip?
No, I totally agree. And this definitely brings, you know, into people's reality that those things that have been scaring me are justified. You know, it might not happen. It might happen once, you know, once or twice in your career, but you better have answers to those questions when it does. You know, if you're a director of IT or a CIO in a company, you're spending a lot more time having conversations with the rest of the leadership team than you've ever had before.
It's a really, really good point. And something else where my mind goes is protect your talent, mm-hmm. right? Because now there's no boundaries anymore. We're not, recruitment has just opened up globally. I know you and I had to talk about that. You brought that up to me specifically from that perspective, that if we have to now nurture our teams, grow our teams, build our team and culture. A big kick I'm on is I used to always say when it comes to cybersecurity, people, process, technology in that order. Mm-hmm. Now I've changed it to an acronym. It's CPPT, culture, people, process, and technology, right? And mm-hmm. culture kind of wraps it all together. And it's an important thing, no doubt.
Yep. And I'm kind of throwing things off here a little because I kind of want to tug on that string. Yeah. It's now that we are a little bit more remote, what are you doing to define your company's culture?
Right. Oh, man. Even think about these business development folks, right? You're out there and their world has got completely turned upside down. Think of the cohesiveness in a call center. Being able to lean over and saying, "Hey, would you help me?" Right. So now they're using different technologies. Yeah. Great point.
Yeah. And for me, you know, I suddenly have to have my Skype window open. I've got Teams. I've got Discord. I've got a bunch of different tools that were not considered enterprise communications tools that are now mission critical, because I know that my senior infrastructure engineers, well, they communicate best on Discord, and that's a carryover from their online video games. And then I know that another team over there, they're on Slack, so I've got to be on Slack to communicate with them. So we're kind of letting them kind of pick the communication channels.
Yeah. Hey, right. Mm-hmm. Sure. And it's about us adapting,
yep,
right? From being able to keep them safe and keep them productive.
Oh yeah.
That balance.
It's definitely been a change where it's traditionally been us driving them, you know, in a lot of ways it's them driving us and us just keeping up.
Yeah. We're losing control, man.
I'm okay with that. As long as it's out of control, but generally pointing in the right direction, from an operations perspective, I'm kind of okay with that. It might terrify a security person a little bit, but as long as you're on top of it, it might be different.
You hit it right on the head, and it could even play into the culture. Right. That could play into people have a little bit more control. Maybe they'll be a little more productive. Maybe they'll be a little safer. I mean, that's, you know, what we're trying to get in the end. So who knows?
Yeah. You know, and I've become a little bit more aware of what's going on in people's home lives than I had been before. You're always aware of what's going on with their spouses. You know everybody's names, you know all their kids' names. In some cases, you knew the pets' names, but it was pretty casual. But now, it's not uncommon to get the wave from the wife on Skype, or the dog or cat jumping into the frame, and it becomes a lot more realistic. Or the kids being homeschooled in the background. It's definitely become everybody has a view into everybody else's household now, where it was always a little bit more theoretical before.
It's interesting because the NFL draft this year, right? It was online. It was like this type of setup, and I thought it was really cool. Yeah. You could see the people's family, you could see their dog, you could see into their house. It just gives you a different aspect that we never had that opportunity before. So that's I like the way you're looking at that.
Yeah, it's interesting, and quite frankly, in this day and age, if the family is happy because my team member is doing work and they're kind of engaged, I have a little more confidence that I can retain that person. Personally, I know that if and when my wife tells me it's time to find another job, that's usually when I find another job. Because they come in from the outside. They see what's going on. They see how it changes. You know how it's impacting you. And I think it's the same thing from the other side. If you've got a good rapport with everybody, and they see that it's a positive interaction, the whole family is more likely to keep them engaged.
Hey, John and Philip, just to go off of that, you know, both of you are making points about working from home and productivity. What's the best way to manage productivity, you know, versus security best practices? You know, we're talking about you get the family and the Zoom calls and all this other detail. Can you guys explain a little bit more on some points there?
Yeah. This is the one. This is the gorilla in the room, right? How are we secure, and how does that not block us from working and being productive? So I think it starts with culture and understanding, and foundationally with the policy and getting an understanding, everybody on the same page. And then when, everyone thinks that IT and security, we're so rigid. We're not. We're trying to do things responsibly. So it's about the communication and about really that understanding. So the most success I've had is sitting down and talking to them about, if someone says, hey, I'm concerned about this, have an open talk with them, because in the end, you can usually get on the same page. And that's my two cents. Philip, what about you?
I'm the same way. I will say that I've become a lot more security minded now that I'm working from home. You break out the Wi-Fi pineapple and see where the Wi-Fi leaks are in the house, and kind of fix those. But you know, it's right now, everybody seems to, I guess from the operation standpoint, if everybody has these slight gaps in their network, then it's better than just one individual or one group having it. You know, it's kind of spread it out. So it's still, you know, just try not to get targeted. That's the way I always look at it. I will have conversations with some of our companies that I work with and let them know, hey, just a heads up, your CEO was just on CNBC this morning. Make sure that you've got everything squared away because you're about to be targeted. You might not have thought about it, but
yeah,
you know, you're about to see some connections from countries you don't normally see connections from.
Yeah. You better be able to have that visibility, right?
Oh, yeah.
Be able to see that targeted is huge. And it's really what I've noticed during COVID is different in the attacks. Mm-hmm. For years, it was just phishing. For about 2.5 years, it's pretty much every time somebody got hit, it was phishing. And the last two attacks that I've responded to wasn't phishing. One was a third party had access. They got hacked and they got in. So it was literally third party access. And the other was an open DNS port. And these criminals scan the world. Open, they get right in, then they move laterally. So it lock our doors, because if you're targeted, it's a problem. Then it's about visibility, containment, mm-hmm. you know, all this type. But for these opportunistic attacks, which are happening a lot now because people are bored, mm-hmm. it's, both are happening. But at least from an opportunistic perspective, make sure our doors are locked, because if our doors are locked, they're going to move on to the next door unless they're targeting you.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's something to keep in mind when we're building our policy and our procedures.
I guess to jump on that is one thing that I've been reminding people about are to be very careful about your offboarding procedures right now, mm-hmm. because when you don't see people, it's very easy to forget to turn off their access. You know, across an organization, somebody might have just, you know, somebody might have left, put in their notice, and the IT group might find out 10 days later, you know, 15 days, if at all, you know, you know, some of these cases, they're going to come back to the office and go, whatever happened to Mary who used to work? Oh, she left. She left in March. Well, you know, her access has been there since March. So,
and maybe disgruntled, maybe it wasn't a good circumstance when that person left.
Yep. Oh yeah.
You know, and it's really weird. We don't see now. So people think, oh, I'm encrypted, I'm going to be fine. Well, you don't even see your employees. I mean, how many, you could, before Mary left, she screenshotted the CRM.
Oh yeah. Or it was real easy to get on people when they would walk away from their desks and leave their computer unlocked.
Right.
Because that was a concern in the office. But really, was that a whole lot of a concern? Because you're in a secure location surrounded by coworkers. You'd give somebody a hard time. But, you know, unless somebody really wanted to mess with that person's computer, it wasn't an issue. Well, now the person might have, you know, might not have any security set up to lock down their computer for 45 minutes. They wander off. Who knows what they do? Who has access to their house? You know, it's
wild.
Yeah, I'd be more concerned now.
Oh, man. The endpoint is really important now. Mm-hmm. We need to watch our endpoints and manage them and monitor them if possible, mm-hmm. because so many different users, so many different applications, so many different networks. Mm-hmm. I mean, you name it.
I'm going to throw out another nightmare scenario that I've seen a little bit lately, which is organizations of 100 to 200 people just telling people, just use your home computers, just use your laptops. Yeah. We're not going to provide company laptops, but, you know, come up with, I'm sure you have something, just use that.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
It is so bad. Just because you and I both know that if someone gets into your mailbox, who knows where they can go, mm-hmm. or what they can do just from that simple, you know, getting in, and how easy we're making that being remote.
That's actually a good segue into another question that we have. How do you protect your company from third-party risk now that we have, you know, so many people working from home? Can you give us some tips on that?
Yeah. Who are your third parties? first of all, what do they access? What information do they access? So understanding, first of all, who do you have? Who are your third parties? Then understand what information they can access and then categorize them. And then depending on the categorization, we're going to require things. And it's the way of the world. You're going to have it required on your company, and you better hope your company's having it required on the people that are taking care of your data. Something with data that's really important. And third party, I'm going to even slash cloud, right? If you collect the data, you own the data until it's deleted. That's it. I don't care where it is. So it's something that people have this misnomer. I'm going to put my data somewhere and it's going to be safe, and I'm in denial, you know, I don't have any responsibility for it, whatever else. It's simply not through third party oversight. Is a huge hole. Philip, I know you're going to
come in here. I will say one of the reasons why there are lots of third-party access, because from an operations standpoint, I'm the one that's going to come into the CISO's office and say, I know it's not best practices, but this third-party company needs an elevated privileges account that's password doesn't change. And then they'll look at me and then they'll say, you know, are you, you know, okay, as long as you tell me that this is definitely going to be an automated system that does that, and I'll nod my head and I'm 99% sure that that's the case. But now that kind of weirds me out a little bit, because you had the artificial sense of control for those third parties when you're in the office and you're interacting with them, and you know everybody's putting their best professional foot forward. Now, you know, you kind of know some of the steps that you've taken that aren't necessarily great, you know, in some cases, because you have to trade off, do I have the money to do what I would like to do? And then you start thinking, if I'm making this trade-off, somebody else is making a trade-off, and then that other company is making a trade-off. And when are those trade-offs going to impact my ability to work with them? So yeah. This is one of the few times in my career that I will actually say these words. I think I'm empathizing more with auditors than I ever have before. And I'm sorry. I mean, those are, you know, those are words that operations people should never really utter out loud. But right now I kind of look back on some of the conversations that I had and say, you know what, that was okay. But now I'm a little bit more worried about it.
Yeah.
Especially when you look down on the number of service accounts that you have and you realize I'm in the 24 range.
Yeah.
And any one of those could be an issue, because it's not associated with an individual. In some cases it has shell access. You know, the password's not changing. I know that I could, If I wanted to be nefarious, I could get in. You know, it's not easy, but it's doable.
Yeah. Oh man, you can buy a managed service right on Tor.
Oh yeah,
right? Absolutely. Okay, for you pay for performance.
Oh,
but there, just something that goes out to my heart on third parties is the oversight. And a big mistake is the stakeholder is the oversight of the third party, and it's just not the right way to do it. Because if I introduce Philip into my organization and then Philip does a bad job, I think I'm going to get in trouble or I'm going to look bad. So I'm probably not the most objective oversight for that. So have some type of vendor management office or committee and have metrics that are unbiased, that we can really measure what we're getting from our third parties. They're dangerous, you know, just because of access.
Now, in 6 months, I'm going to be a complete hypocrite in some of these cases, and be having exactly the same conversations again. You know, I'm honest about the hypocrisy. But it's one of those where I'm, at least in the back of my mind, I'm going to be thinking about a little bit more, because there are going to be more third parties, not less.
Well, and the criminals also realize this is an easy way to steal. Mm-hmm. From even simply hiring a janitor.
Yep.
Seriously, it doesn't play as much now, but it's still play. But it's an example of, they know this. Mm-hmm. Janitor, and see, $12 an hour, you want $5,000 this week? Mm-hmm. Right? So these criminals know this, and they're recognizing they're jumping on a third-party bandwagon.
All you need to do is tell the janitor, hey, if you ever see an odd list of characters that's stuck on a post-it note, just pocket it. You know,
that's it.
That's somebody's password, you know.
It came to my mind, and it's an important story. We're in a bar, and it was in Rochester, New York. We put $500 on the counter and said, give us your work credentials. And we had a computer there, so we made sure that it was legit. Give us your work credentials, and you can have $500. And three people did it, you know. And afterwards, I was thinking, I didn't need to offer $500, right? So I could offer a lot less. That just shows you that you have to be careful. Third parties care even less, probably, mm-hmm. than that, right?
I've seen some of those things where you'll have a few drinks into a crowd and then start asking ridiculous questions, you know.
Yeah.
Why do you need to know where I grew up? What do you need to? Do you care about my first pet? And things like that. You realize you just told me your mother's maiden name, the street you grew up on, the name of your first pet, the name of all your children, and like, I can take anything I want from you right now. And three drinks in, they realize what they just did. Yeah.
Right.
It's not changing any of that.
Think of how smooth that conversation could be to get that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just one of those. This is what IT people do at bars. You know, it's one of those where, you know, everybody else wonders, you know, when you go to a convention or something like that, these are the operations and security conversations that happen. We find it amusing.
Oh, we love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now that every one of our listeners will be a little skeptical about telling the name of their dog or where they grew up. Yeah. Philip, you mentioned trade-offs a little bit earlier in this, and this is a trade-off as well. Mm-hmm. But from an operations perspective, how do you evaluate a project's success or failure, especially during times like these?
Sure. Yeah. Traditionally, you attack a project and you're like, all right, you know, these are the success criteria for the project, and these are the adoption metrics, and these are the availability and uptime metrics. That is nice to have, but what I realize what we don't have is the taking your temperature factor that you have when you're all physically in the same location. I might track a project, and the performance might be great. Everybody's filling out the survey and saying that this is absolutely fantastic. And then you walk into the break room, or you're waiting for your K-cup of coffee. And then the person just looks over and goes, this is terrible. I'm like, my work doesn't, I just don't do this anymore. It's fine, but now I just pull it all manually. I don't even use the new product. And then you start going, all right, now tell me more. Tell me what's going on. And then you sit down with them and you have the conversation. And that's when you get the actual truth. When you send out a survey, for the most part, people are inclined to give a 10 out of 10 or a 5 out of 5. That's just the nature, nature of this day and age. You know, even if you go and you get your car serviced, they're like, you're going to get a survey in the mail. I hope I got a 10 out of 10. And then when you fill it out, you're like, well, I guess I got to give them a 10 out of 10. So now what I've determined around, success and failure criteria with projects are, don't believe the numbers that are coming through, and don't necessarily believe the uptime and availability. You've got to look more for true utilization. So, how are people doing it? How full are the queues? How is it being adopted? Which is really hard to actually track, because it's not necessarily something that's clear. And be a little bit more. Ask the second and third question when you're talking to people about it. Tell me what you really like about it, because in some cases they'll go, well, I haven't actually used it yet, but you just told me it was great, and because that's what they say. So right now, I find myself with a lot of different conversation windows open, and I'm really just following up and asking questions and tell me how you really think. And it's become a lot less metrics focused and a lot more just working really with the stakeholders.
Yeah. To understand.
Yeah.
So security, it's a little different. There's some leading indicators, mm-hmm. right? There are people yelling at you because they can't work, or mm-hmm. you know, you might have an incident, right? So there's some definite leading indicators to know if it's going well. But really, it's about baselining your risk, mm-hmm. documenting it, reducing it, and repeating. That's your success. And while that's happening, not having bad audits, mm-hmm. not having incidents or breaches, et cetera. So success in security, how do we measure the project? If people are still productive, we haven't had an incident, and reducing the risk and documenting it, I would say that's success mm-hmm. from a security project perspective.
I never thought that I would be on this side of the conversation when it came to project success or failure, and it becomes a lot more, you know, a lot less STEM and a lot more liberal arts than I ever thought it would really be when it came to project success now.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is an art and a science, right? You hit it right in the head. It's both.
Oh yeah.
And the people that are good at it do both and understand that.
Oh, I'm trying.
So you talk about success and failures and, you know, monitoring those. What mistakes are you guys seeing organizations make when it comes to protecting their data? You know, we have people working from home now, in the office, doing both. What are you seeing out there?
Sure. I see a lot more people that are dealing with large files that are just storing it remotely on thumb drives, on little USB drives that they have and are working on it that way. Cause they don't necessarily want to work real time with a 100 meg file across the network because it's unwieldy. Well, now that file is stored on a local drive, it's out in the wild. You know, they can unplug it, throw it in a drawer and forget about it for 6 months. That's what I see a little bit more. And a lot of these work files are significantly larger than they ever were before, where it might have been just dealing with CAD, you know, 5 years ago. Now, how many people work with giant Excel spreadsheets with tons of different options? I mean, it's amazing what can be done with Excel, but it's too unwieldy to be really working with them, you know, remotely. So that's what I've seen. And I don't know from a security perspective, what you see.
Man. So I see a lot of bad mistakes. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing that resonates with me is people think that they get some security software and they're safe. Mm-hmm. And it's just 0-day attacks are just make that. So it's not true. Right? You need to have that visibility in your environment. Tools get beat, I think, is a lesson that people don't realize. They get some nice tools, firewalls, et cetera, and they build their security program around those tools. And it's not the right way to do it. It's a mistake. The right way to do it is to build your foundation, build your policy, understand your requirements, your business, what you're trying to do, et cetera. And then build that foundation and then figure out what tools and how to layer them and really how to have the visibility, because attacks are changing. And now, instead of just being operable, pay the ransom and we'll give you the encryption keys and you can work, they're going after people's data. Mm-hmm. They're getting the data. Then once they've got their data, they're going after the backup. And then once they've got the backups, then they go after their systems and all hell breaks loose. But what happens is the new flavor of attack is pure extortion. Mm-hmm. Forget working and being productive. We have your data and we're going to exploit that data. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, and that's a problem. Let me tell you something. When you're there, that's not good, right? And so beyond that, people don't know where their data is. The criminals encrypt the drive, and these people don't even know what's on the drive. So where's your data? Mm-hmm. How sensitive is it? Who's accessing it? You know, those type of things are really important. And people don't know them. That's a mistake.
I want to follow up on that a little bit, which is, how are you seeing when it comes to ransomware payments? Because we sort of see a lot more people are paying. I don't know if it's the same, you know, on the security side as much as it is on the op side.
It's a ton because of what I just said. So it used to be, if I'm backed up, you know, I'll be able to recover, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the way the mindset everybody was. As long as my backup's work and I'm backed up, et cetera. But now they're going after data. So what I was just involved with one with a very large billion-dollar organization that just got hit, and they couldn't procure Bitcoin. It took them three organizations to go to. The first two said they were too busy. And that is crazy. It's just something, Philip, that I was like, oh, man. They so it took them three people to actually have to be able to procure it. And people are paying because they're not prepared. If you don't have that visibility and they take out your data, you're in a very bad position. I've been at places, my models don't pay. You should never pay. If you pay, you're a bigger target, all this other stuff. When I've sit at the table over the last couple of weeks with different clients, you know, different people that were being attacked, I don't know. It's hard. It's a business decision, but sometimes it's just a terrible thing. It's just bad. I hope I didn't butcher that answer. The answer is you don't want to be there because it's a bad, bad spot to be.
I would say about 25 years ago, and I'm really dating myself, one of the concerns that we had when we were doing business in South and Central America were executives being held up, kidnapped, and held for ransom.
Yeah.
But they were being held for ransom for $312.83. They were being, you know, we'll send you a note, we'll give you a guy back, but we want $912.11. And we're like, why are these numbers so crazy? And there was actually some justification that came out of there, where it was religiously okay, in some of these areas, as long as you were only asking for exactly what you needed for things like power bills and things like that. If you asked for anything more, that was definitely a sin. And so we had some executive insurance down there, but we were getting absolutely, like, a guy would just show up, you know, and just stand there and just say, you know, I want $300, and, you know, and it just became a thing where you just paid him, because it was more expensive to hire a security guard for somebody like that. I kind of saw that with ransomware recently, when they were asking for, $6,000, like, just pay him.
A lot of people are.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a business decision in the end, right? It's a business, reputational, productivity, and legal. Mm-hmm. You know, you take those, they're starting to prosecute. So basically, it's the when you're paying a ransom, you're paying criminal organizations, you're paying terrorists, mm-hmm, generally. So I shouldn't say they're starting to prosecute. I should say there's rumor, mm-hmm, that they're going to start prosecuting people that pay ransom to these terrorists. So that's just an interesting spin that has just come up, and mm-hmm, I've just gotten dragged into. And it's very, very, very interesting, you know, what it's, goes on.
It's odd. There's actually an ATM in Cambridge, Massachusetts that handles Bitcoin. That you go, you could just get Bitcoin. And yeah, if you're there on that line, everybody is there because of ransomware. There's two or three people, and they're all buying Bitcoin because of ransomware.
It's literally an ATM for Bitcoin.
It's an ATM for Bitcoin. Yeah, it's just and it's just, you know, there's one, you know, it's just this little thing. And but you hear some amazing stories. You'll hear, I paid, and then their customer support people called me and walked me through how to remove it from my network.
It is. That's exactly what happens. Sometimes, though, it doesn't restore.
Yeah.
There is a chance of that.
Yep.
Happening. It's weird because what we do from a forensics perspective is we find out who the group is, mm-hmm, or who did it, and then find out their MO.
Yeah.
Do they pay? Are they reputable? Mm-hmm. So that's where you're at, and that comes into the that's part of the equation.
Yeah, there's definitely, I've run into some, you know, Eastern, tend to be more the Eastern European Bitcoin ransomware folks that they have the help desk, they do customer service, the people on the phone, they are the same people that are in the Apple stores in China. They think they work for Apple, and the people that are on these phones, they think they're working for reputable companies, but they're just providing customer support. It's odd, but I have found myself, explaining to a parent, just because somebody's in IT doesn't necessarily mean their job doesn't mean they're standing in a parking garage with a handful of money to get a laptop back. Yep. Sometimes that's what it means to be in IT in this day and age.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, that's send the consultants. That's what we usually get for that sort of, that's how we get involved.
Yes.
Yep.
Philip and John, you guys have both talked about, obviously, times are changing, requirements are changing, security is very big right now. How are you dealing with long-term projects that have changing security requirements mid-project or halfway through?
Philip, start us off.
Okay. And this is definitely one of those where I will mutter under my breath about John or somebody else. It's I guess it's just a fact of life. If I've got a project that's going to run 3 years, I know that I need to put a lot more slack in the project budget than I ever had before. And most of the, I'm not gonna say most, but sometimes that project overrun is from security, where it traditionally had traditionally been for additional project hours from the development folks or from the business side. So,
Phil, what percentage of your IT budget is security? And sorry to throw that at you.
It's one of those. How do you define security? Do you firewalls are secure, so I guess if I were to say we are, if I were to use the aggressive term for security, I would say maybe 20%.
Yeah. That's, between 10% and 20% is generally where people are at. And, I don't know, I'm still torn. I don't know what the actual number is there. From my perspective, it's about communication. It's about being in at the beginning, from the planning phase all the way through cutover and acceptance or whatever criteria you have there, and then ongoing. Security is a verb.
Yeah.
Right? It's ongoing and it never ends. So really, the more communication and more involved you can get up front, we cannot have these, surprises, it's better. But more and more we have to work together. That's for sure.
10 years ago, if I were to put together an extended project team, IT security was probably not a part of it. It was one of those where we interact with them occasionally. We'll get the requirements. We'll make sure we handle it. But now you want to have a security person that's at the table, that has a stake in the project, that is there from beginning to end, and is actually a member of the team, where that just really wasn't the case, even 10 years ago.
It makes me think of something with you, Philip. And so what we find is, when we look at risk, right, we're trying to reduce risk, that 70% of risk is outside of IT. Mm-hmm. Yeah, IT is holding the bag and responsible. Right. So that equation is where the culture, and where you really need to understand, where's your risk? What is the, if you ask people, what is the biggest risk to your business? Do they know? Not my experience. A lot of times they don't. Where is it? What HR has a portion of it, right? Operations has a portion of it. C-suite has a portion of it. Let's identify that, understand where our risk is, and then assign some responsibility. Mm-hmm. Right, to that, because everything falls on IT, and it's so funny to me, because it's not your problem mostly, but you're holding the bag with it.
Thank you for saying that. I definitely appreciate that, and I guess the factor, once that's realized, is understanding it's not going to change. That's the nature of being in IT, which is, we are expensive, and when we do our job, we're considered way too expensive for what we're worth. And when we get called in because something happens, it's because we did a terrible job. There are very few things in the middle that involve thanking IT. Because in some ways, you know, if we do well, you don't see us, right. You know?
Right.
And then
you don't get that call saying that you did such a great job.
Yeah. It's one of those things where they're in the back going, man, we really overpaid or we really overbuilt that environment. Next time, you know, let's take whatever IT says and scale it back by about 20% because they really padded that project out there. And right. They don't know that, we skated by, or, you know, we've got our fingers crossed that our estimations are correct once real live traffic starts to roll in. But, you know, I guess if we wanted to be appreciated, we'd just get a dog, right? That's the old joke.
It definitely does the trick.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
So you guys have talked about a lot of the challenges with remote workforce. One last question. What's the biggest piece of advice, you know, either one of you can give to organizations who are either starting to bring the remote workforce back into the office? And then same question, best piece of advice for organizations who are remaining remotely?
Sure. Plan for both. That's my take on it. Just because people are coming back right now doesn't mean they're necessarily going to stay back. And also, just because you're calling people back to the office doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to heed that call. There is a segment of the working population out there that is just not going to go back into the office 5 days a week. And to be perfectly blunt right now, because we're dealing with a global workforce, they have the power more so than the employer has. In a lot of cases, if you get back 80% of your employees and 20% that leave are the good ones, you know, the really effective performers, you know, your company's done. So one of the things that I'll tell people in this day and age is plan for both and do not expect it to the new normal to be the old normal.
100%. Right. And normalcy's gone. Right. Mm-hmm. So the first bit of advice I would give is to understand that. And let's take a look at what we had as policies last year are out the window. Mm-hmm. So we have to revisit to make sure our policies align with what we're doing, because what I'm seeing is they're not. Second piece of advice is, I say this lightly, I'm more of a zero trust guy, but I'm going to say this, trust but verify. Mm-hmm. And just verify and make sure when you hire a company, hire an employee, how do you know that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing? Because if you don't, they might not be. And that could have very, very bad implications, you know, when that happens. So I'm going to say oversight. That's my advice. Let's have oversight. Let's trust but verify. And let's understand that times have changed. And let's take a look at our policy foundationally. Mm-hmm. And then from there, grow our businesses.
I will say one of the weird questions that we're getting, and I kind of want to get the security side of this, is we'll have people saying, well, if people are going to work from home, how can I turn their cameras on to make sure that they're really working? Or do you have keyboard loggers so I can see everything that they type, you know, because they're working from home?
You know, if you walk into this as a whole, we're going to have a segment on this. Okay. Uh-huh. This gets into the privacy aspects, right? And where is that line? And is there privacy? You know, Rite Aid stores are using facial recognition right now. I don't know if you know that, but they know when you walk in Rite Aid who you're at. So this is becoming more and more of an issue. It's something I don't want to give. It's a problem. I'm going to say that. All right. It's a definite problem. I believe we should have indicators. I believe we should have metrics and oversight. but in our next session, let's talk a little bit more about the privacy aspects of work from home and the outcomes that we're seeing.
I am totally game for that. Because we're getting some really strange requests that As the consultant side of it, you have to be polite in responding, but in some cases you're just like, no, you can't do that.
The process has been broken.
Yeah.
The precedent has been broken. So
one of the things that I would say is if any technology consulting firm ever comes in and tells you that they are everything you need, do not do business with those people.
Absolutely. You know, and that's one thing, you know, we've learned that, right? The hard way, the smart way, et cetera.
That's actually one of the conversation topics I think that we should kind of pick up next. People will ask me, does protocol networks do security? And the answer to that question is yes. Now, how do you define security? Because what we do is we do security from the inside out.
This was awesome. And yeah. I love these talks, and I hope everybody got something out of it. And Philip, I know I learned a lot, so that's great.
Oh, that's cool.
So in order to find us at Harbor Networks, you can head over to www.harbornetworks.com or go to LinkedIn and type in Harbor Networks, and you'll be directed right to our page.
And for Protocol Networks, we are protocolnetworks.com and the same thing. Best to find us on LinkedIn. We're not the best when it comes to Twitter.